You could have been anywhere else right now, but you decided to choose this podcast to listen to. Let me say this. My name is Antonio Laborte, the host of the show. Thank you guys so much. If you do tune in, if you have tuned in before, that you keep doing so, and it's greatly appreciated. And I love the support, and I love you guys for listening and following this whole thing. This is a new episode for you guys. I hope that you enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting. I really appreciate it. All right, peace. All right, so the first thing that I want to even get into, right, like first things first, is the vaccine. Okay, so the amount of just nonsense around what a vaccination is, what may or may not be inside a vaccine, why vaccines may or may not be effective, it doesn't need doing my own research to come to a logical conclusion about the purpose of a vaccine. And I hate to be so condescending about this, but I've just seen too many people suggest like preposterous ideas about why vaccines are so controversial, right? Let's go through a brief lesson on vaccines. Okay, vaccines in their design are not measures that eradicate or eliminate viruses or diseases with any injection. Instead, they provide a means of mitigating a situation. They look to lower the severity of a novel or deadly disease. Two conditions need to be met in order for a vaccine to have the ability to essentially, you know, quote unquote, get rid of a disease. Number one, within a population, there needs to be a great enough percentage who do get the vaccine so that the community can curb, you know, rampant spread from person to person. Okay, and number two, the rate at which a vaccine is administered needs to be swift so that the potential for any variation, right, is decreased and the potential for elimination is increased. Okay, so let me say that again. So the how quick enough people can get a vaccine will determine whether or not a vaccine has the ability to get rid of a virus. Okay, because once variation turns from, you know, a probability, right, we saw different politicians, different scientists talk about the potential for a variation to come if not enough people get vaccinated in the right time. You know, when a variation turns from probable next step into something that we have to deal with in reality, the effectiveness of the original vaccine becomes less potent. Right, the original vaccine that you see with Moderna and Pfizer that we got, I don't know when it first came out, was it the spring of 2021? That will start to become less effective the longer it's prolonged and the less of the population is vaccinated, because it gives time for other variants of COVID to come about. And so the original vaccine is intended for the original COVID-19 virus. And when these different variations come along, that no longer, you know, it can no longer contain that. It's not as protective as it could be, since the components of the vaccine were not intended for these hybrids. It was not intended to provide your body with, I guess you could call it a blueprint, for these, you know, these new alterations to the chemistry of this virus. Vaccines provide your body a chance to look at the offensive play calling before the ball is snapped, to use a sports reference. It gives you a chance to see the pitcher sign before they throw the ball to home. It doesn't guarantee that you'll score, right? But it puts you at a better advantage to know what to do next and to be able to fight against it, right? The problem I have with vaccine discourse, whether it be on TV or just, you know, out in the streets or whatever, is that it disqualifies its validity, and sometimes it's just lazy talking points where the majority of the people who hold these points, they live like contradictory lifestyles. And just, I would respect you more and view you as a reasonable, rational adult if you left the vaccine talk at like this. Is if you're like, listen, I don't want to take this vaccine because I just simply don't want to take it, right? Not if you do the, you know, I don't want to take it because I don't know what's in it, or I don't want to take it because, you know, it's chipped, or I don't want to take it because X person or X politician advocates for it, you know, or, you know, or denounces it or whatever, or if they advocate it, you know, I don't want to be told what to do. you know, don't make it so complicated. Don't take these backroot arguments about not taking it because there's a push to do so, right? Or because you don't agree with the groups who are pushing for this vaccine thing to get going. The vaccine is optional, right? I'm part of that camp. Listen, yes, it's optional. I'll say it one more time. It's optional. It's just, it's a preventative measure, but, you know, it carries credibility, but it's, you don't have to do it, right? But hear me out on this. Being a free thinker is both making your own choices, but having the ability to correctly decline a smart suggestion. That's a weird way to say it, but in English, it's like, it's having the ability to say no, even in the face of a better, more rewarding outcome, simply because you don't want to participate in it, right? For example, like, let me see. Okay, so like declining a pay raise because you simply don't want to take on the extra responsibility that comes with it, right? Like, you know, typically a pay raise is a good thing, right? And it gives you more money and maybe more flexibility. But if you don't want to do it, you don't want to do it, right? But not declining a pay raise on the basis that it'll actually decrease your payroll for the next year. You see how that doesn't make sense? Like don't claim, you know, this to be something that it's not, right? Let's tackle some thinking points for a second. If at any moment in your existence, you by force or voluntarily received any medical treatment of any kind or opted to go to a medical center for any reason, your basis for questioning the credibility of this vaccine is on shaky ground, not completely unfounded here. Don't confuse what I'm saying. I don't advocate for walking blindfolded. And I personally have, you know, I have patience for, you know, honest discourse on the lengthy history of the wrongdoings that are either purposely or negligently carried out by medical fields. I get that, you know, whether that be on the premise of race, gender, class, whatever it is. And it's certainly worth, you know, looking into because, you know, reputable organizations and profiles have been known to butcher science or to advance certain agendas or decisions that aren't rooted in real, you know, rigorous meta-analysis or anything like that. And that might be something I'll get into another time, you know, especially because in psychology's backstory, you know, there's a lot of questionable things in the name of science that people have advocated for or conducted or whatever. But given the history, the medical advancements and behavior done with vaccinations in the United States, I'm simply talking about with vaccinations, nothing else. That point, it simply does not stand, right? Number two. If you are of the population who asks, what is in the vaccine? And this is a little bit more of the asshole in me. I would like you to rattle off the ingredients and or the components of any medication pill that you have, any prescribed tablets, any health supplement. I want you to do that by memory and describe what it does for me right now. Okay, that's that. Number three, if you avoid a vaccine because you're being pushed to do so, You're being advertised a vaccination. You hate the government involvement. I love the enthusiasm, but your approach is misguided. Save the anti-government, you know, stuff for issues that actively pose a threat to human life. The theory of, you know, I guess you can call it, I don't know, government conditioning, right? That, you know, well, it starts with the mandatory mask and then they'll force you to do this thing and then, you know, it leads to this. To me, it just sounds like you don't trust yourself, or maybe you lack the ability to detect when the government is trying to do some real questionable stuff, right? Like things that raise concern about, I guess, ethics or whatever, right? And real potential threats. Like you, to me, that sounds like I can't trust myself to point that out, right? Like I don't know when to draw the line, right? Because it's not even so much about just listening to the government. It's like you don't. It sounds like you don't have the ability to be like, to look at a situation, something in the news or whatever, and be like, huh, you know, that sounds pretty messed up. Like, I don't think, you know, that's something that we want to engage in, right? Like, you're taking the point of anything that comes out of the government's mouth is something that you should question. And okay, that's fine. But, you know, if you're going to go that route, then, you know, just be consistent across the board, no matter what government agency, you know, you're talking about. And if at this point, you know, you continue to push the idea that COVID in and of itself is a creation, right, meant solely to raise fear and ensure, what, mass compliance, then I'd like you to, you know, go recruit some friends, bring shovels, and go down the list of families whose relatives died of COVID to truly prove if that's the case, And don't forget to do so overseas, right? Unless COVID is just an American-made thing. Right. A part of the little whole government thing is like, you know, this is something that's created by, you know, the American government, whether it be Democrats or whoever. It's like, this is a worldwide thing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand where that's coming from. Now, for a second, I'll pretend like I can rationalize with you, right? Are there people who may perversely use COVID for personal or political gain? Yeah, for sure. Can there be people who fail to empathize with the harsh reality that is living in a COVID world where, like, no gray areas can be defined, you know, about personal choice or whatever? Yeah, absolutely. For the people who lean on COVID to continue misguiding themselves or others, regardless if you've taken the precautions over the last 2 years or not, you know, learn to position yourself better. Really put, you know, be smarter. Think more critically about what's going on around you. And again, if you don't want to do something, make that the reason. Don't make shit up because you're scared, you know, or you're confused or you're pissed off, right? Just because you're being told to do something that you don't want to do, don't start making up lies. Don't handle the situation like an adult, be an adult, right? That's all I got to say on that. That vaccine thing, man. I mean, just be an adult. Just if you don't want to do it, make that the reason. I have more respect for you if, you know, you just look at it and you go, I don't want to do it. Don't start going down this hole of, well, I'm not doing this because of this flawed reason. Right? Or because this person said this, now I'm not doing it. Or I don't know what's in it. When really you're confused and you're scared. You don't know. Right? And that's okay to be that. It's okay to be a little bit on edge. It's okay to be, you know, it's okay to be skeptical about it. Right? To have a healthy level of skepticism. It's okay to do that. Right? That's encouraged. But don't come up with things that just aren't true. Right? Or just think critically. Right? Just think about what it means for us to have this sort of vaccination for what, you know, the situation that we're in comparison to other places around the world. You know, just if you don't want to do something, don't do it, right? But be an adult, be critical, you know, be rational. That's all. All right, so to move on to some news regarding vaccinations, one that may be less politically charged and more encouraging for readers and listeners. Reports say that this new approved vaccine will have the potential to save tens of thousands of children's lives a year, with malaria having a death rate of about 500,000 people per year, most of which being sub-Saharan Africa. The vaccine specifically targets, which I had no idea what it was before I read this, but Plasmodium falciparum, I think I'm saying that right, which is said to be the deadliest and most prevalent of the five malaria pathogens. The World Health Organization has given it the cosign, and Dr. Pedro Alonso, director of the malaria program, calls this an historic event. It's the first vaccine developed for a parasitic disease. But there are still questions about the vaccine being worthwhile, right? Within the New York Times article, it says, as a standalone with only a 50% efficacy rate after the first year, and because trials did not directly look for the impact that the vaccine had on death, it's unsure to confirm whether shipping these things out to these countries where other factors can negatively influence a safe rollout is something that they should pursue. They also did a model study, which I guess it's almost like a projection of potential outcomes, but you use real data. It stated that the most volatile spots could prevent nearly 5.4 million cases from occurring. That's a huge margin of people increasing their chances of stopping this thing from sending them to an almost guaranteed grave. Even after reading this, you know, the most important notion is that the vaccine, like most health recommendations, it goes well when it's done in a multidimensional approach, right? Using more than just one preventative measure to increase one's own safety. And I was reading within the article, too, that, you know, for malaria, bed nets, which was and is still very popular, you know, it's said to only cut death by those under the age of 5 by like 20%, you know. But if used in conjunction with the vaccine, it could greatly improve the chances of their survival. But there still needs to be, you know, board approval and a negotiation between Gavi, which is the Global Vaccine Alliance, to first, I guess, quote unquote, purchase the rights of the vaccine, and then deliver it to countries that request for it. The reason why this story is important is much more about the idea that a death sentence like, you know, malaria is closer to being stifled than it ever has before. So the glaring issues is that, you know, trials have not been overwhelmingly convincing, not even decently convincing from a statistical standpoint, but having a near, you know, something that's near a solution for what is a parasitic problem, like they said, the first of its kind, is incredibly important. And this isn't really much of a problem in places like the U.S. or well-known developed countries, right? But this is a loudmouth killer in sub-Saharan Africa, given, you know, populations of Kenya and Ghana a fighting chance. It's a crucial step in solving one of the most dangerous threats to human life, essentially. But like we've seen in this country, but for different reasons, different circumstances at different times, getting the right materials in the appropriate spaces can seem more like wishful thinking than any reasonable action that you would think would make sense. In the article, you know, Dr. Hamill spoke on this. He said the ability to reduce inequities in access to malaria prevention, that's what's important. It was impressive to see that this could reach children who are not currently being protected, end quote. We know healthcare is conditional and exchange-based. More disappointing, it sort of like filters out the people who perhaps need the most care and attention. You know, receiving adequate but even just accessible healthcare is a blessing. And understand that, you know, in this country, we have a vaccine for a global pandemic that costs $0 and 0 cents. There are countries outside the U.S. who may not even reach a point where vaccination, you know, there are countries that the vaccination isn't even in the realm of possibilities. So the fact that our privilege allows us to rationalize, and this is going to sound a little weird, but, you know, rationalize the reward of receiving a free vaccination versus not. Getting to decide how we should exercise our own free will in the face of uncertain health circumstances. It's a laughable yet, you know, frightening reality that we get to sort of rationalize the point of, okay, do I want to do this? You know, do I want to do this, opt into this, you know, vaccine, or sort of take my roll the dice here? Where other countries, if you presented them with a vaccine for this virus, or, you know, the chances that most of the population will take it is a lot higher than ours, you know? Their perspective about it is just different, that's all. But after reading this, you know, really what I took away is, you know, they're still early in the process, but to be able to come out and say that we are on the verge of coming up with this thing that can potentially curb a very deadly disease for a very specific, you know, region of the world that's been dealing with this for decades, you know, I think it's a fantastic headline, it's a fantastic read, and it's important and it's worthwhile. You know, they may think that the vaccine is not worthwhile at this point because of the efficacy rate is low, and I get that, but to even sort of get your feet in the water with this is it's a fantastic first step. All right, to move away from the vaccine talk, there's another article that I read. I think it's from the Washington Post. Janique Martinez told reporters that her neighbor's disturbances over the last 5 years started off as just, you know, loud music playing at night, consistently loud, shaking up the house, whatever. And just this past summer, these disturbances took a whole nother direction. Strobe lights, monkey sounds, along with blurts of racist statements pulled from different audios from the past, have been blaring outside their front door for the last several months. Police have held the statement that the neighbor's actions are not criminally actionable, although the Virginia hate crime law may state otherwise. Dana Schrad, the executive director of the Virginia Beach Police Department, told the Washington Post that, quote, "You can walk a fine line and not cross over into something actionable." And another quote, "This neighbor knows how to walk a fine line, but it doesn't make his actions any less harmful to the family," end quote. So what's really going on here is that the police are saying that we know what the right thing to do is. I'm sorry, no, no. The police are saying we know what the right thing to say is, but when it comes to doing the right thing, we aren't compelled to explore it, like, at all. And even the city attorney and the Virginia magistrate said that the neighbor's actions are not at a level where they consider it criminal behavior, but will closely monitor the situation again. So they understand the rundown about making a public statement that appears to be invested and looking to do the right thing, but all actions show that they are uninterested in making any kind of real pursuit and hoping that this thing just kind of goes away on its own. Maybe the family moves, maybe they settle it in-house, quote-unquote, you know, or I should say in the neighborhood, right? Hopefully they get this thing, you know, kind of out the way so we don't really got to deal with it. That's sort of what I got from it. But so what's going on here is subtle racism. And it's not even so much subtle based on my own definition, but the definition that has been, I guess you could say, proposed, but also created through new contextual ideas about what it means to be racist and to engage in racist behavior, right? Racism in America is assessed by three criteria, and it's outlandish and it's overgeneralized criteria. And it's overgeneralized because those who are culprits of racism, white people, want to ensure that their microaggressions and covert racism can go really unscathed. They're willing to forego the practices that were adopted 100, 200 years ago, but they don't want to look into the nuances that keep the remnants of racism and discrimination around. Because then that would mean that they would have to encounter guilt, they would have to encounter a social scarlet letter, they would be forced to reckon with giving up a lifestyle that their ancestors have pretty much forged to protect. Racism in the eyes of white people needs to be one of three things. It has to be institutional slavery, it needs to be enforced segregation, or it has to be a racial slur. Racism is only achieved if one of these three things happen, and oftentimes there are excuses surrounding that last one. Why am I be okay to let that last one slide? I'm talking about racial slurs. Or maybe I can rephrase it too. Perhaps they're open to exploring other avenues of cause and concern between a black body and a white body. So racism is a last resort, right? Before that comes what you see all the time. You know, it's just a bad apple, or it's just a bad person, or they just have a shitty personality, or, you know, or maybe, listen, maybe they lack the details of what's going on, or they lack this and they lack that, or whatever it may be, or they need to make room. You know, we need to make room for their growth or give people time to learn. It's like racism in a white world is a Hail Mary. They're only willing to go there if that's the only option that unequivocally makes sense across the board. Until then, there must be justification for why this white person had to act, say, or do those things to this black person. Right? And so, you know, when I read that story about how the police and the attorney and, you know, the judicial officers are just kind of like, you know, this person knows how to walk a fine line, so we can't really do anything about it. It's a privileged perspective to have. I've been using this word privilege a lot today, but it really is. It's like you can look at this situation and go, this is just more of an annoyance rather than a real, you know, hate crime, right? And who are you to decide that? I would love to see what the demographics are for the police department, and then even for that judiciary system. Who's coming out here and saying that it's not, you know, worth any sort of real punishable action, you know? Like, why is this not a case? This person is deliberately standing outside on their property portraying these audio sounds of monkey noises and audios with blurps that say nigger, like, I don't know how many times in the audio. There's a video that I saw within the article that shows the guy standing outside with, I guess, some sort of stereo or radio, whatever. And you can hear the excerpt. It's like this stupid, like, quote. I don't even know what the reference is from, but it's just, you know, it's playing these jungle noises and then monkey noises and then, you know, all these different slurs. It's like, how is this? It's evidence. Like, it's happening right there. It's like, how are you not going to be able to, you know, take that in and do something with that? I don't know. It's just, it was a crazy story, and I want to bring this up because I just went down to Virginia Beach like this weekend to, you know, handle some, you know, family business with a car or whatever, and you know, and I'm like, how is this even like okay, you know? How can you even get away with something like that? Even just being on somebody's property, not issuing like a, you know, a restraining order or whatever, but I don't know. But anyway, it was just, this story is crazy. If you want to go read it, check it out. It's on the Washington Post. But yeah, I mean, it's outlandish. It's outlandish, to say the least. So I want to end the podcast on a little bit more of a positive note, something that you may get a kick out of. On Twitter, I saw this headline about an artist whose art submission was titled Two Blank Canvases, titled Take the Money and Run. It was supposed to go to this Danish museum, and it was commissioned, where the artist was supposed to come up with something about work in the modern world. The headline of this article, it says, quote, "In the name of art, an artist pockets $83,000 and creates nothing." That's a hilarious title, and I couldn't help but think that this man was a nigga, because this is some shit that niggas would do. And it's actually quite clever as far as like the whole theme goes, because it definitely represents work in the modern world. You know, get it how you can, go get that money, and don't try to, you know, bring yourself to death while doing it, you know? Like, do what you gotta do, but, you know, don't work too hard, you know? The artist behind this piece is Jens Hanning, and a white man, for those of you who are interested. He's a conceptual artist, and his work is public if you want to go check it out. I took a look, and I wasn't necessarily drawn to it or taken back, but I definitely appreciated some of the work that I saw, and just generally appreciated, you know, his attempts at creating something generally. But man, when I read about this story, I was just in shock. I was like, because if you're the person who paid this man to make this art, like, how are you going to tell him that this isn't worth the art? Like, you probably sick. Like, you probably, you know, you mad that you just paid $83,000 for something that you could have bought at Michael's for $5, right? But you know, I mean, listen, if you're going to commission something like that, you got to think about some of these things, right? You know, some people are going to get creative, and they may pull some money like this, you know? And Jens Hanning, the person who made the art, he said that this is only a piece of art if I don't return this money. He's saying, if I give this money back to you, then everything that this art stands for goes to waste. And I agree. You can't give that money back. You want to have that art piece mean something? You got to keep that money, man. Take that money and run. That's a perfect example of the work in the modern world, man. Get it how you can. Fuck what these people think, bro. He also said, I believe that I have created a good and relevant piece of artwork which could be hung on the wall. The museum director who commissioned this work was half annoyed and half amused, which I completely understand that, you know, given his role in this, right? You forked over that money. You know, yeah, you annoyed that you paid that much for that. But it's like, damn, you know, I mean, he got one on me, you know? The director said that Mr. Hanning's stunt was in the spirit of the commission, which was to prompt reflections on how and why people labor for money. So, I mean, in the spirit of art, you got to let this piece stand. Let this be a deeper meaning to all who walk past this seemingly meaningless canvas. You know, let them get value from this. Let you get value from this. Let this be a lesson learned to you, Mr. Director, that, listen, be a little bit smarter about why you're commissioning artwork. The price that you commission artwork, right? What are you asking for them, right? If you had a contract, maybe get those details in place. You know what I'm saying? Like, because you got one pulled on you, that's all. You got one pulled on you. You can't do nothing about that. You know, but with that note, you know, please, you know, make your art, be creative, be open to new experiences, be respectful, and please, if there's one thing that you can take away from this, steer away from the scripts that you hear about whatever politicized person that you, or groups that you closely follow. Yes, think for yourself, but, you know, don't be a contrarian without a cause. I heard that from Howard Bryant on one of the podcasts I was listening to in regards to a different situation I won't get into, but, you know, don't be someone who just is on the opposite side of things just to be on the opposite side of things. Like, have a reason for, you know, your skepticism or your decline for, you know, joining different things or whatever, you know? Defiance and fair skepticism live on two different sides of the road. Continue to question and to try to be accurate, right? Do not be defiant because you hate the alternative of having to agree to someone else's terms. You may believe that you're acting on your own accord, but really you're just proving that you can't act responsibly when things aren't going how you like them to. You know what I'm saying? Like, listen, stay safe, be smart. But you know, think about things critically. That's all I'm asking you to do. Think about things critically, okay? Be safe. Be smart. Have a good rest of your day. Thank you for listening to this. I'm not sure when the next one's going to come out. School's been kind of hectic with some of the stuff I got to do, but, you know, I'll continue to look at different things I see in the news or whatever and try to come up with different ideas about you know, the podcast. But I appreciate you for listening, if you are listening, and have a good day. And with that, that's the end of the episode. Thank you guys so much for listening, tuning in, sharing, doing what y'all do. This wouldn't really happen without y'all, so I appreciate you continuing to support this, support me, and yeah, making this so worthwhile and rewarding. So I appreciate you listening. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you have a good rest of your day. Thanks.